Welcome to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast, your resource for exploring the world of disciple making and leadership within the church. Discover Jesus' strategy for raising up leaders, growing the church, and multiplying a movement. Let's jump into today's episode and explore the power of a disciple making leader.
All right. Well, welcome to this episode of the Disciple Making Leader Podcast. My name is Glenn Underhill. I'm serving as a co-host with my friend Craig, the man Etheridge, and I am the executive director for Disciple First, an organization committed to really helping the local church make and multiply disciples like Jesus. So, man, super excited about this this podcast, and think that it's got lots of great things we're going to unpack and talk about today, discover, learn. In our last podcast, we had a good friend of ours, Zach, who kind of shared his story as we were talking about the optimal disciple-making leader and kind of his journey along both the pathway and the pipeline and how God did some great things. And actually, today, we're going to have another great friend of ours on this episode, and super excited for him to tell a little bit of his story, which is really good too.
Absolutely.
So, Craig, let's talk about maybe, you know, we've been spending some time talking about this idea of a pathway. What is a pathway?
Yeah. So, man, if you've listened to any of the episodes and you're kind of picking up on what we're teaching here, I would encourage you to go back to the episodes that really unpack the pathway, because we're just kind of skimming over the top right now, just kind of reviewing. And so if you're a little unsure, man, go back to that and dive in a little bit deeper. But the pathway is really kind of the, if you think about a horizontal line, you're walking down this line, you're walking down this pathway, and it's really how you grow in your walk with God. So it starts off, you're kind of exploring who Jesus is, or exploring, you know, who Jesus says he is. And then you come to a point of conversion where you confess your sin, you receive Christ, and then that kind of moves you to the next stage, which we call the connect stage, where you're really connecting with believers, connecting with the church, starting to serve a little bit, starting to kind of enjoy the community, kind of put some roots down. And then the next stage would be what we call the grow stage, which is really where you start being trained and equipped to feed yourself and to multiply. And so this is, if anybody's talking about, you know, I'm being discipled, usually, Glenn, it's like in this third stage, right? This grow stage, high accountability, man, you're learning to share your faith. You're learning how to read the Bible on your own. You're learning how to pray. You're learning these skills, these competencies that you need to multiply. And then the last stage would be what we call the multiplication stage, where you're now walking with God. You're walking out of the overflow, and you're able to invest your life in others. You're able to share your faith. You're able to disciple another person, help them take a step along their path. So, like you said, you love the pathway because it's really is a journey. And so that's the language that we use. And by the way, we didn't just come up with that, you know, sitting around on a marker board. We, you know, this came out of the study of the life of Jesus. And you're going to see in the Disciple Making Leader book, this just emerges out of the life of Christ.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know, that's probably one of the things that distinguishes us from maybe some other organizations, is this idea that really we go back to the idea that Jesus is the model for life and for ministry. Right. And as you look at it, he definitely had a pathway of helping people go from untrained to fully trained, from irreligious to becoming a fully devoted follower of Jesus, one that was capable of reproducing and multiplying their life into the lives of others. So that's really that pathway piece, right?
Yes.
And it's really good. But you know, as we talked about in these other episodes, is that then we began to recognize, hey, not only did Jesus make disciples, he also was building a movement at the same time.
That's right.
And so there was a necessity to also be, as you're moving someone along the pathway, you're also beginning to see that they have skills and gifts to be a leader, and to be a disciple-making leader, optimally, to be that disciple-making leader, so that there's really a pipeline, so to speak, a leadership pipeline of, as they move along the pathway, they're also moving up the vertical pipeline. So talk a little bit about the five stages of the pipeline.
Yeah, thank you. And we did a whole episode on that. So please dive into that if you like. But if you can think of the pathway as horizontal line, think of the pipeline as a vertical line. Mm-hmm. And you're going up, like you said, Glenn, moving up the pipeline. And so the pipeline is really, there are five stages. The self-leader, which is really just a volunteer. I don't say just, I don't mean just like unimportant. Certainly our volunteers do everything. You know, we're so thankful for them. But that's where all of us start. Right. Every one of us started at some point, we were volunteering. And so you start as a volunteer, as a self-leader, then you move into a team leader where you're like leading a group of volunteers, so you're kind of leading the team. And then you may move up to a leader of leaders where you're leading actually team leaders. That's a leader of leader position. And then ultimately a departmental leader where you're overseeing a whole department like the student department, worship department, kids department, something like that. And then ultimately you move up into not everyone, but some move up to a what we call an organizational leader, where you're overseeing multiple departments, and you're really helping shape the direction of the whole organization where it's going. And so, you know, there are a lot of churches, big churches, small churches. They all have strata and levels of leadership. They're already there. You know, they may not be identified yet, but they're there. And so we start to ask the question in the pipeline. You know, how do you move people up into higher levels of leadership? Because if you need more leaders to multiply. Right. And you need more leader, but you don't want just any kind of leader.
You want the right kind of
leader. You want the right kind of leader. You want a disciple-making leader.
Which is the optimal leader.
Right. So I'll let you describe, because our last episode, we talked quite a bit about what is this optimal pathway. So what do we mean by that?
Yeah. So the optimal pathway is basically if you were just to take – if you have the pathway, which is horizontal, and the pipeline, which is vertical, right up the – you take a line that goes from the where those two intersect and go directly right up to the right, and that's that optimal leader who is growing through the pathway as they also are moving up the pipeline.
I wish people could see your hand motions
now.
You're doing
I'm like
you're killing it with the hand motions.
I need to draw it on a whiteboard. It's hard to describe.
It is hard when you're just listening, right? But anyway, I'm just people envision Glenn doing the hand motions, and you'll get it.
That's right. So maybe we ought to may have a song for that or something like that, right? We
like do BBS.
The hand motions. Yeah. That's right. So yeah, so that optimal leader is and we were able to share Zach's story of how he was walking down through the pathway, and as he was walking down that pathway, we were beginning to see giftings of leadership, and then beginning to give him also more responsibility and training and coaching along the way, and began to move him up into other higher levels of leadership, and then ultimately he became an organizational leader here at our church, left his corporate job, and is now leading a large segment of our operations ministry here at our church.
Yeah. So I think the big takeaway is the optimal trajectory of a disciple-making leader is one that as they're moving down the pathway, they are then slowly emerging into higher and higher levels of leadership, to where once they kind of get all the way to the multiply stage and they're multiplying it and they're owning it. I mean, they're a disciple maker. Mm. They're also leading at higher and higher levels, so that not only do they embody disciple making as a key value, but they just emanate that throughout all the people that they're influencing and leading.
Yeah. It pushes its way down for
sure.
That's
right. So the whole organization begins to take on this flavor of the importance of being a disciple maker. So the key idea is you don't move people up the pipeline until you move them down the pathway. Yeah. And we haven't always done that.
No.
And there are times that we've gone, oh man, I wish we had, you know.
We've paid a price.
We have.
Yeah,
we have,
so to speak. Yep. And it's interesting to note, I do remember distinctly when we began to really land on this, we did have some team members who said, hey, this just isn't for me. And right. And so they found other places of ministry and moved on, and wonderful people who love Jesus, but just this wasn't where they felt like that's what what they wanted to be a part of and to do. And so that does happen.
It does.
And so, you know, again, that optimal trajectory, but then, you know, there as, and this episode really is focused though on what we're calling the divergent path,
yeah.
Right? So what do you do? You know, so you want to have an optimal deal, but when we started this process, we realized, boy, we have some leaders on our team that are kind of on a divergent path,
right?
To really living this out, right?
That's right.
And so there was a process to figure out and to think about strategies of how we go about that to really help people push and pull in different directions,
right? So I would say there are two divergent paths. And by the way, most of the people that are listening to us right now are like us, maybe find yourself on one of these divergent paths. So the first divergent path is someone that climbs up the pipeline rapidly, but did not really move down the pathway
right. Very
far. I mean, not that they hadn't moved at all, but right. I mean, they're clearly saved and born again, but they never really got very far down the pathway, but they shot up the pipeline because, you know, of ability and skill and charisma and whatnot. And I know that was your story. In the last episode, you shared some of that. That was really my story. You know, I mean, I grew up in churches, godly parents, gave my life to Christ when I was 7, had youth pastors that invested in me, went to college, had people that invested in us, and went to seminary, had, you know, and while I was in seminary, started getting involved in a church, and I was one of 5 youth interns, and that was a youth associate, then I was a college guide, then I moved into, that was a departmental role, and then started moving into overseeing departmental leaders and into an upper level senior leadership position. And then I finally became the senior pastor in another church. So here I am, the senior pastor, and there were 3 businessmen, you know them well,
yep,
that started discipling me. And so they were actually helping me move down the pathway, even though I was already a senior pastor. And I began to realize that, you know, wow, I knew everything that I thought I was supposed to know at the time, but then they were beginning to really challenge me and stretch me to move down the pathway more, and they really began to invest in me spiritually and show me how to multiply and build in these competencies that would help me disciple other people. And as I was kind of already up the top of the pipeline, I had to kind of bend to the right, if you will, to really be that disciple making leader.
Right.
And that was not hard for me, because I think I was really in kind of a desperate situation at the time, meaning that, you know, the church wasn't growing, you know, I was trying to figure out what to do. And God just brought me to a place of, man, I was just super teachable.
Right.
And in that humbling position, God brought these godly men, and I'm just forever thankful for them,
yeah,
that taught me how to walk with God and then to infuse this desire and DNA of disciple making that now is you know, I can't get away from that. That's who we are. And those same guys invested in you.
Yep.
And so,
and we call that divergent path an L2 leader, right?
That's right. If L1 is the optimal leader,
right,
that's the first kind of leader we want. L2 would be those that kind of shoot up the pipeline, but they're not really down the pathway yet, and they have to bend.
Yeah.
And honestly, some of the, Glenn, you know this to be true, some people just don't want to bend.
Right.
Yeah. Do we go ahead and say that? Let's go ahead and be honest.
Put it out there, because it's true.
And some just don't.
Yeah.
I mean, they're like, hey, this is who I am. I don't want to disciple people. I really don't want to invest in people. I mean, I'm fine just the way I am. I'm not very coachable. I'm not very teachable. I'm just going to do my thing. I'm going to run my department. Leave me alone. And if you keep pushing on them to invest in others and live out this disciple-making DNA of Jesus, they're not going to do it.
Right.
And you mentioned before may bounce, yeah, as a result of that.
May bounce, yeah. And so that person kind of lacks maybe spiritual maturity. They have giftings and skills as a leader, but they lack that. And we call the other divergent path that L3, who's someone who's got some spiritual maturity, yet they've never really you know, moved up the pipeline.
Right. So that L3 would be kind of a very flat to the right line on the chart, so to speak, of that XY axis where they've been down the pipeline, their pathway. They are mature, they're multiplying, but they've never risen up into levels of leadership. And not everybody is supposed to.
No.
But there are some that can and some that would if we would help them get there.
Right.
And so we have somebody in the studio today.
Right.
That is a friend of ours. Bum, 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 bum.
Yeah, you know that drum roll, please.
and Josh McCaslin is in the house.
What's up?
And welcome, Josh, to the Disciple Making Leader Podcast.
What's up, Disciple Guru guys?
Come on. And Josh is a senior leader on our staff. And he has a divergent path story. He was really that L2 shooting up the pipeline, but not as far down the pathway. And we want to hear your story. So, Josh, first of all, tell us what you do on the team. Tell us what your role and responsibility is, how long you've been here and that kind of thing.
All right. Sounds good. Well, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah.
First off, this is fun.
It is.
I love to get to hear you guys in this setting be able to talk about it in just a real candid way because we live it every day, right? And so I'm the community engagement pastor here, which the simple way for me to say that is I helped love people from the street to the seat. So we want to share the gospel out in the community locally and then get them in the doors and be able to help them see what a healthy church family is and then hopefully get them to a place of making disciples. And so my story is interesting because I grew up in a church home. My dad was a pastor and I was at church all the time. And my dad was at First Baptist Houston, which I was like in third grade, which I really remember, a big old church, John Bazzano, big production. Yeah. That whole deal. And so, man, there's a lot going on there. Right. And so then I saw a progression of my dad helped plan a church called Metropolitan Baptist in Houston and then went to a church plant with Kurt Dodd and then moved to Irving. And so where I actually met Zach, who was on the previous episode. Yeah.
Played football together.
Yeah, we played football together at Irving High School.
Crazy.
Yes.
And so you were the quarterback and he was the O-line.
O-line, the tackle. And he was actually the tackle that I didn't have to worry about. I had my left eye on him all the time. So I grew up in a very big church environment. And so I came to Christ in ninth grade. It was probably about the third or fourth time that I had because I went to these crusades and I just was always these big evangelistic moments in my life. But I remember in ninth grade really solidifying and saying, hey, I know the assurance that I have and who I am in Christ. And so, but then my junior year, I surrendered to the ministry. I felt a call to the ministry. I didn't really know what that was at the time. And because I love sports and I played basketball and football in college. And that's another story. But that was my focus. Right. And I got to my last year of college and there was a Methodist church that had about 12 students that needed somebody to come help with their student ministry. And I was like, I'll do it a little bit on the side and just go help them. And, you know, and from there, it just kind of started scratching an itch of the calling that I had.
Yeah.
And I just began to really step into a ministry role and really caring about the next generation. I just fell in love with students and really my wife loved to work in student ministry and really was a partner with me and all that. So it took. But to talk to what you were talking about, an L2 leader, I moved up pretty quick. My next church I moved to had about 100 students. I did that interim. Then they brought me on full time. And then we had about 300 to 400 students that were coming regularly. And I was probably 25 or 26. Yeah. We took two big buses to Panama City to church camp. And my mom, she was like, are you really in charge of all these kids?
Mama's worried for the kids.
Oh, you're not worried totally, for you. Not at all. No, not even close. And, but I just continued to just kind of move up the pipeline, if you will. I went from a student ministry, a student pastor to a next gen pastor who's overseeing what we called cradle to college at the time. So it was babies all the way up to young adults. And then that moved into about three campuses. That was at a church called New River Fellowship. It was a convergence of a Baptist church and another church that kind of came together in a non-denominational church, but it was in a kind of almost a rural area just right outside the Metroplex. So it grew really, really fast. And out of necessity, I just kept moving up.
Right.
And I really had no idea what I was doing. people kind of liked me. I had the charisma.
Yeah.
And don't get me wrong, I had a relationship with God. I mean, I had a walk with God. That was the only thing that got me through those times. But I really felt like I was just pushing a car up the hill all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always, it was a dog and pony show every week, it felt like, just mm-hmm. keeping up with that rat race of just trying to keep students in the door, keep parents happy and kids and all the things and just learning. And I'll never forget one day, one of our youth associates came in and he said, man, we really need to do some discipleship here. We should do some discipleship. And he was pretty adamant about it. And I remember looking at him and I kind of got mad and I'm like, what is discipleship? Francis, this is his name, Francis. I was like, what's discipleship? I'm like, go to Whataburger and spend 2 hours getting the Bible with somebody and then just walking away. And that really was sat, like, didn't sit with me well for the next couple years.
If you were going to raise up the next generation of church leaders, how would you do it? You probably wouldn't rely on online courses or sterile classrooms to train them. You'd probably invite them to walk alongside you as you do ministry. You'd probably invest in them spiritually and stretch their vision of how God wants to use them. You'd probably raise up leaders, well, the way Jesus did, with a simple invitation to follow me. The Cross Creek Residency is a place just like that. Here, college graduates who are called to ministry get one-on-one investment and training from seasoned pastors and leaders over the course of a year. During that time, they will be trained to make disciples who multiply, and they're exposed to multiplying church plants who are growing and thriving all over the world. If you have a graduate in your church who feels called to ministry and has a heart for making disciples, then check out the Cross Creek Residency. Movement begins here. To learn more, go to crosscreekresidency.com. So what was the angst that you had? Because you're like, Francis, you know,
it just cracks me up. You know, I don't know him, but it sounds funny.
What is the discipleship?
Francis is a great dude, by the way.
I hope he's listening.
He's
right
still
now.
In ministry. So
okay, that's so cool. But you're kind of frustrated, right? Well, what's behind that frustration?
I just think that what I saw with our students, and what I saw with my workers, what I saw with our congregation, with their parents, is that we had discipleship in different ways, but those ways to me were not, they didn't match with what the Bible was saying.
Yeah.
And with what Jesus was saying, what a disciple was, mm-hmm. and what he was commanding them to do. And so it was, and, you know, hey, discipleship, hey, well, we have it in Connect Group. We have it in a little group here, you know, or we have it in a class, like a financial literacy class or a freedom ministry class or something of that nature.
Right.
But it was not, there was something that was missing and I couldn't put my finger on it. We would do check the boxes. We'd teach them how to have a relationship with God by, you know, getting in the Word and memorizing scripture even, but it was not a consistent, intentional way of moving them down this pathway to become disciple makers.
Right. Yeah. So what changes?
Hey, so I want to just say something real quick. It's almost like it's a menu versus giving someone a map. And so, you know, it's just kind of like, hey, it just everything lumps in and it's all discipleship. And we hope through some divine accidental way, hey, you get to this place of being this amazing Christian, which we don't even know what an amazing Christian is, or superstar, you know, well, superstar, but or what this, you know, super saint Christian is, right? Mm-hmm. So we just kind of, it's just all this, just throw it all in and mix it all up in the pot, and hopefully comes out on the other end as something special and unique.
Mm.
And sometimes it happens,
yep,
by what I would call divine accident.
Yeah, no doubt.
Totally. And I will tell you this, one of the coolest things about this story for me being here is it's, my dad was in these ministries. He was doing the same thing. I mean, he was having to push cars up hills, and he was charismatic, and he was good, and he was gifted, and he could just juggle balls really well. But at the end of the day, as he got older in ministry, he started to do more bivocational things, and he began to just invest in men more. Mm. He met a guy named Dave Dawson, and he went through some equipping.
You remember Dave?
Oh, Dave. He's one of my favorites. He really is.
I mean, yeah, you and I have known Dave a long time.
Long time.
But anyway, that's so cool.
Yeah. But when he's going through and he's starting to like really dig into what does it mean to be a disciple, I'm still in a big church trying to be able just to keep all everything going and right, juggling it all and feeling like this is not sustainable.
Right.
I mean, before I got here, I was on the verge of going, do I work in the church or I do something else?
Yeah.
Because it just wasn't sustainable. And so what I did see in the last stages before getting here was him really intentionally meeting with men and giving them a map, like you were mm-hmm. talking about, to go, hey, how can I really grow and become a disciple maker?
Yeah. And he's praying that for you too, right?
Oh, he's totally praying.
He's like
for
going,
me.
Hey, you know, he's praying for you that this is going to click with you.
Yes.
Which is so cool. Is
yes.
That piece of it.
Yeah.
Yes.
That it's more than just a thing that I do. It's who I am.
Yeah.
It's really, it resonates with the whole person and it impacts every piece. Is even we were talking about on that last episode, is that Jesus really is at the center, and it permeates every bit of whether it's work, whether it's church, whatever slice of the pie outside of what's ever at the center, it permeates the whole thing.
Yes,
yeah, no doubt.
And you can't just add this to your menu.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. This is not about adding this to your menu. This is saying, hey, this is the map.
Yeah.
This is where we're going because this is what Jesus commanded of us. And there's grace in all of that too.
Oh,
because
yeah.
I look back and I talk to some of my youth pastors and some of the leaders that I had prior to this, and I say, hey, listen, this is, first of all, I want to apologize, not because I don't think what we did was wrong. It's just that we didn't move in a direction and we didn't have an example of that. Yeah. And so now let's talk about that. You know, because I want them to sustain. I don't want them to get stuck and being like, is this really what it's all about? Because I believe this model is actually a sustainable model for ministry.
So you're just living large, man. You've shot up the pipeline. You're at the highest level. You're leading multiple departments. You're across multiple campuses. I mean, you're living the dream. And I'm talking to Zach about who do you know that would be really good? And he goes, I know this guy, but I don't think he would come here. We used to play football together. And so anyway, one thing leads to another. You and I meet at this restaurant. I remember it being kind of outside or something like that. Anyway, and we start talking, and one thing kind of leads to another, and you come on our team.
Mm-hmm.
And we're trying to talk to you about this pathway, this thing that we have here. And so you and a couple other guys that just joined the team at the same time, we all get in a group together.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll let you kind of pick up the story from there.
Yep. So once we get into just grow group that we call grow groups, that we the beautiful thing about it to me was there was a commitment to it and a value that it was almost a non-negotiable in the way from the beginning, not because people were paid to do it, but it was one of those things. It was like, hey, here's what the mission is.
Yeah.
And are you going to commit to the mission?
Yeah.
And from there, it was either, hey, you're going this direction or you're not, you know? And so then that was what gauged like what we did and why we did it. There were some major things in our life that we could move towards, but the minor things, we could kind of shove those off to the side so that we could keep going in the direction of going like, hey, we want to invest in men who are going to invest in men, right? We are going to invest in people. And investment takes time. It takes effort. It takes conversations that are like, you have to kind of look back on some of the things that you did and go, you know what? I wasted my time on that, you know? But like, we're going to start from where we're at. And God's grace is awesome in the way that like we can keep moving towards this. What does it mean to be a fully developed disciple?
Yeah, that's so good. So we're in this we're in this group, and we're starting to kind of move you down the pathway a little bit more.
Yeah.
Right? We're starting to challenge you in some areas spiritually, just in your own. Not that you weren't walking with God before, but now you're
right.
It's just a higher challenge, and you're taking it. I mean, you're buying into it. I mean, you've got your verses down, man. You're doing the thing, and you're starting to get this idea of what it means for disciple making to be a part of who you are and how you lead, and not just, like you said, adding it to the menu. And so what was that like for you, looking back on that now? What was that like for you to start to see that change in kind of your philosophy of ministry?
Yep. So the thing I think that if I'm looking back on it now, what I do see is some of the fruit. Like last night, I'm in a recovery ministry. One of the guys that I first discipled, he's one of the key leaders in our recovery ministry.
How cool is that?
And so just getting started, the investment piece, it took longer with people. I had to really take time to pray. You know, as pastors, sometimes there's so many people that are in the sea of your ministry that you really don't really see people and invest in people. It just never was a value where I came from before. But once you start investing in people and you start praying for them, and then all of a sudden next thing you know, you're investing in them, and then they're starting to take the mission seriously. They start to see what their gifts are, and then you start to plug them in and you start getting them in the pipeline, right? I mean, like, and so this just interesting for me to, it wasn't like I did anything crazy different. It was just, I was more intentional with people.
Yeah.
And going, hey, listen, this is a potential disciple.
Yeah. You're seeing the individual, not just the ministry and holes you got to plug with volunteers.
Yeah. And I didn't see it from like a charisma standpoint of like, man, they've got this, a lot of this talent, and they've got all this charisma, and they've got all these things that like what used to be valuable to me in ministry. It was that like, hey, no, God can take you where you're at, and as you start to grow in a relationship with Him, as you start to walk with Him, and as people start investing, those things will naturally come out, and you'll get an opportunity to be. They'll hear a call to go, hey, this is what I want to do. Yeah. Like, I think I need to do this. I think I want to be a part of a recovery ministry. I think I want to come into worship ministry. I think I want to, you know, whatever ministry that it is that they're feeling like, hey, I could use my gifts there.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, Glenn, you've seen leaders that are L2s, and yeah, it was your story. Mm-hmm. It's my story. I guess all of us were L2s at one time, shot up the pipeline, did not move down the pathway. And some people are like Josh, and they just bend down, and they become disciple-making leaders that see people differently, and they start to raise up and disciple leaders around them that multiply. But then others resist, and we kind of mentioned that early on. So what's the difference? Why one bends and the other one doesn't? What causes that?
Ooh, that's
and Josh, you can jump in too. I think we ought to talk about it. What do we see?
That's a tough question. I think some of it is the essence of am I going to be teachable, right? And because when I think about moving someone from an L2 to an L1, it's not only, you know, helping them develop a lifestyle as becoming a disciple maker. And those disciples had to be teachable. They had to put themselves under the submission of Jesus, right, to become that kind of a leader. But I think, too, the other side of the coin is this idea that I see it as a philosophy of life and ministry. And I I think that's in my experience, it has been, that's been the biggest, that's great for you, but I just don't see it as the philosophy that I want to get behind, that it encompasses both my life and my ministry.
Wow. Josh, what do you think?
I think that when you start to prioritize God's way, his commandment, what Jesus says, and when you start, then certain things fall off and you count the cost.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, like I said, sports, I remember when I accepted my call to ministry, I went down to my youth pastor, Keith Smith, and I said, hey, I feel called to ministry. And the first thing he said to me, he's like, hey, are you willing to give up basketball and football? And I was like, whoa, hey,
hold on a second.
What are we doing? I just said I wanted to go to ministry, you know? But I think honestly, that is really, as I've 22 years in full-time ministry, I think that is exactly what it boils down to. Yeah. I've seen at the highest level, the biggest churches, fastest growing churches, small churches, church plants, it doesn't matter. If you want to sustain and you put Jesus, you really say you're going to put Jesus in the center and that's what helps you sustain, you have to be willing to let go of some other things that the world would say is really important. And there might be even good things.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of the day, it's not moving you towards God's best in your life.
Yeah.
And so I'll echo very similar to what Glenn said is like, there's just this, it's a complete life change in you. Mm-hmm. It's saying, hey, I don't really even know the best way, but that's why I gave my life to Christ. I need more of him and less of me. And so then I have to just count the costs. Hey, what do I need to prioritize? What are some things I need to let go? And then I'll tell you this, as I do that with my family, with my kids, and I say, hey, listen, well, maybe we just can't go do that. You know, maybe you can't be on that club team, or maybe you can't, maybe we can't buy whatever that is. It's like, because this is the direction we're going. I think it's really hard because a lot of times the world is different, but then God always comes through and you have this peace about you. You have this, you know, purpose with your life that just is like, I don't know if I could do anything different.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. You know, I've watched leaders, some like you, Josh, that shot up the pipeline, like Glenn, like me. But then people start investing in them and they knew there was something more. They knew there was something different than just running programs and, you know, running with your hair on fire, but not really seeing life change. And so they were hungry for it and they just soaked it up when somebody invested in them and that became a part of who they are. And then some that just don't, you know, they're just not, either they disagree or they're not teachable or coachable or just would rather run programs and not let people see in their life that much. You know, because they don't really want to be that honest with people. And whatever the case is, I think that those of you that are listening to this, you're a leader and you're going to try to see some L2s, you're going to try to bend them to L1s. Just know that some are going to go with you,
right.
And then some are not.
Yep.
Right.
And
but don't let that keep you from doing that work of ministry.
Right.
And, you know, and I think sometimes as a leader, you're like, well, how do I do that? How do I take a guy like Josh and make that happen? And it just, it means you have to, just like Josh, it was you pouring into him those missing ingredients. And I think of it as, you know, I was sitting here listening to Josh and I was like, it's kind of like it was like him taking a fresh drink of water. And it was like, this is what I had always been wanting, but I didn't know, but man, now I'm drinking out of it. This is it. Right. And for some, they'll take it and some they won't. And I think leaders have to be aware that, hey, if I'm really going to move towards this optimal disciple making pathway and pipeline, some will not go. And Jesus had many that did not go that direction. And, you know, sometimes you just have to help people find new places of ministry.
Yeah.
And it's okay that we may not get there and agree on that. But, you know, you will not move forward if you have some on your a lot on your team that aren't wanting to move that direction, and some that are. It's a train wreck.
Yeah, it's interesting to me. I've found that whenever I've discipled pastors who've been in the game for a long time, and you start to say, "Hey, listen, this is our philosophy of ministry, and this is the direction we're going, disciple making leader," they'll say, "Oh, how are we going to do that? Like, there's no way we can do all that." Just show me. And then you've got the young pastor who's never done it before, and you say, "Hey, we want to make you a disciple making leader," and they're like, "Oh," at first they're like, "Yes," like, "This is great." But the problem is, it's hard regardless, right? Investing in people, it takes time and commitment. Ours is almost a 21-week commitment in a lot of ways that's a lot for a pastor, because there's so many things that are coming at you. I don't care if you're a big church or a small church, you've got all these things that are coming at you. But I can promise you that, like, with us, we're like investing in leaders, investing in people matters.
Yes.
And so other things might have to fall off.
Yeah.
And so we're just going to work with this as we go. It's going to be hard coming at it from either way, either a new pastor or you've been doing it forever.
Right.
But investing in leaders to actually multiply, I'm telling you, like, that's the game changer.
It is. And how cool is it that you're sitting here and you're like, "Yeah, and that guy, one of my early groups, now he's leading over here." And Glenn's going, "Yeah, the guy I discipled, now he's on staff at this area." And, you know, and you guys, I just mean this with all my heart. I'm so glad that I get to serve alongside you guys. Mm-hmm. Y'all are awesome. Y'all eat, sleep, and breathe God's word. You want to follow Jesus. You want to emulate Jesus. You're just running hard after it. And that bond that we have, that this is, man, what Jesus called us to do, it just doesn't get any sweeter than being a part of a team like that. Yep. And sharing our successes and sharing our woes, you know, man, in business God, and he flamed out, you know, we can all feel the pain, you know, of it. But at the end of the day, we're seeing lives change and lives multiplied. And we're seeing people in our own church that some people have multiplied 3 and 4 and 6 and 8 generations deep. I mean, it's that crazy. And that's because we have at the organizational level, we have men that are living it out, that you're doing it right now. You're discipling leaders. You're investing your life in people, and you're setting the example for them to follow. So thank you guys, both of you, for that.
Yeah.
Shoot. Yeah. Thank you.
Hey, Josh, thanks for being here. Man, it was so good to hear your story and for you to even give some of your words of, you know, some wisdom of what to do as an L2 to bend back to that L1 or, you know, and even just thinking about, hey, how do we, you know, move as you're moving the L3 up, you know, just, again, identifying those clarity pieces of what it takes in terms of competencies to get them up the pipeline. So, again, however we might could help you as an organization at disciplefirst.com. Again, we work to really help churches through training and coaching and resourcing. We just have written a great resource called The Disciple Making Leader, and would encourage you to go out and get it on Amazon. You can get it on our website. It's really kind of a deep dive into a lot of what we're even talking about here. Again, we look forward to our coming episodes where we're going to continue to just dive into this topic of disciple making leaders. So again, Josh, thanks. Craig, thanks.
Thank you, guys.
And we look forward to our next podcast.
Thank you for listening to the Disciple Making Leader podcast, brought to you by Disciple First. We hope today's episode has been both helpful and challenging in your journey to becoming a disciple making leader. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button to make sure you hear the next episode. And if you have a moment, we'd love to hear your thoughts. Leave a review and share this podcast with your friends. Until next time, keep making Jesus the model for your life and ministry.